morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. Here's a quick announcement. Our March heart-centered and passion-driven Inspiration for Better Living digital magazine, designed to help moms build a better future for themselves, their families, and loved ones, is now live at inspirationsforbetterliving.com. March's theme is Celebrating Women Empowerment in honor of Women History Month. The magazine offers inspirational stories from our dedicated team of experts to help you navigate your current situation with confidence in your motherhood journey as the COO, if not the CEO, of your family. So please go to inspirationsforbetterliving.com and treat yourself to some engaging, entertaining, and enlightening stories. You deserve it. As for our radio show this morning, my guest for today is Caroline Dowd Higgins. Caroline is a career and executive coach, consultant, and speaker who is passionate about helping individuals and organizations navigate change and thrive. She is a certified leadership transpersonal executive coach, a Marshall Goldsmith stakeholder-centered executive coach, and a Gallup Strength Coach. Caroline hosts the award-winning podcast, Your Working Life, and is known for her inspiring TEDx Women Talk on Reframing Failure. Caroline's latest book, Your Career Advantage, Overcoming Challenges to Achieve a Rewarding Work Life, is a treasure trove of insights and strategies. It delves into the secret of a successful career and a fulfilling life and offers practical advice on navigating the challenges often accompanying professional growth. Whether you are a mid-career professional seeking to advance or a C-suite executive looking to maintain your success, Caroline's playbook is a valuable resource. It addresses the unique challenges and unexpected blind spots can arise on your career journey by offering innovative ideas, inspirations, and techniques proven to achieve maximum impact. As for our kitchen table conversation this morning, Caroline and I will be talking about her remarkable life's journey and her latest book, Your Career Advantage, Overcoming Challenges to Achieve a Rewarding Work Life. Happy Wednesday, Caroline, and welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing today?
Hi, Johnny. I'm really well, and I'm honored to be here during Women's History Month, so thank you.
Fantastic. It is wonderful to have you on the air with me. Your Career Advantage, Overcoming Challenges to Achieve a Rewarding Work Life, is an empowering and inspiring read. It is a well-written playbook that is definitely a page-turner. Congratulations on its release.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let us get started by getting to know you a little bit better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Oh, that's such a great start-off question, Johnny. I appreciate it. And, you know, it's interesting because our childhood does impact our adult life. So thank you for asking that. So I live in the Midwest right now. I live in Indiana. But I grew up, I was born in New York City and was raised in New Jersey and had a wonderful life there as a kid growing up. And I sang in the church choir and really found my way to the performing arts as a young kid, did a lot of regional theater in New Jersey. There's a lot of great art opportunities there to be on the stage. And then I decided that I wanted to make music my profession. So I attended Indiana University and earned a master's degree and an undergrad degree in opera. I studied and speak several foreign languages and had a great experience traveling Europe and U.S. for about 10 years singing professionally. But Johnny, I'm always going to be honest and vulnerable with you and with any audience. It was a tough existence. While I was working, it was extraordinary. I absolutely loved it. But like anyone in the performing artists, there is a feast or a famine. And I will tell you that the feasts were delicious. It was wonderful to have all of the work. But then when things got dry and it was difficult, it was hard for me to sustain that profession, that career, financially. So I really had to do some self-reflecting, and I decided it was time to make a shift. So I ended up working with a career coach and really learned so much more about my transferable skills and the other things that I was interested in beyond the music world. And that was the genesis for my first book, which is called This Is Not the career I ordered, because it really parallels my absolute passion and then having to make a shift out of necessity. And long story short, because there's so much for us to dive into, that was an accidental career, Johnny, because I worked with a career coach and absolutely loved the process of self-exploration and thinking about what else can someone do after a career reinvention. And I loved that process so much that I was really intrigued and interested in helping other people. And fast forward, for 20 years, I had been working in higher education, the corporate world, and nonprofit in the career and professional development space. And in 2022, when I launched my side hustle business full time, it was a wonderful opportunity for me to really focus on my passion of coaching, training, and speaking. And I'm so grateful that you also mentioned my book, which I'm really proud of, called Your Career Advantage. And there we are. So now I am a full-time entrepreneur and loving my career.
Fantastic. That's a wonderful life journey. And the sense that I get is the fact that you're having fun. I mean, of course, they're always up and down in life, but you've always had fun in the journey itself.
I would agree with that. And I actually have a motto, a tagline that I believe so dearly that I trademarked it. And that is, enjoy your career, love your life. Because, Johnny, it's so easy, especially in present times, as we navigate a post-pandemic journey. And my goodness, today, March 20th, is the four-year anniversary of the onset of the COVID pandemic that really shut the world down for years. So it's an interesting time of reflection. But it's also a time that many people are overworking, and I was one of those people, and I was missing my life. And that was really sad, because careers should be celebrated, but you don't want to replace it with so much work that you can't enjoy your life and be healthy and happy. So I'm grateful that I'm at a point in my life where I have a vibrant career, but I'm also honoring my life.
Wonderful. Fantastic. Coming back to when you were growing up, who were the major influences in your life?
Yeah, I love that question. You know, I'll just give a little family history. So my paternal grandparents were immigrants from Ireland, and my maternal grandparents were not direct immigrants, but their grandparents immigrated from Europe. So we came by this hard work ethic and this strong sense of working and responsibility, very honestly, because my ancestors came to America to find the American dream. So that hardworking ethic was really instilled in me by my grandparents and my parents at an early time. I started working, as did my siblings, when we were in our early teen years. And I'm grateful for that, because it taught me so much about the value of money and thinking about what we need versus what we want and how to be responsible and really live within your means, but also aspire and set goals. So I would say those family influencers were very profound and still are. But I also had some incredible teachers along my journey, not only in high school, but in college. And as a singer, you're always working with a voice teacher and with a coach. And those individuals made a great impact on me as well. So I feel like I've been really fortunate not only to have teachers and mentors, but also sponsors later in my career who really helped me advance.
Very, very interesting. When you look back, being an opera singer and so forth, and this is the beautiful part of the story that you have mentioned, because consciously and more importantly, subconsciously, you've always been exposed to someone that is mentoring you and coaching you, if that makes sense. There's a difference between teaching. Teaching is just reading the ABCs, but coaching is looking at your skills and how we can enhance it. And then, of course, mentoring you and say, hey, I've been here before, so this is the go through door number one, so to speak, door number two. And so it was just natural. How does that contribute to your overall self-esteem and confidence?
Yeah, coaches, and now as a coach, I can really relate to this from a personal experience. A coach helps you become the best version of yourself in life and career. They can help you illuminate the blind spots. And we call them blind spots because we can't see them. You know, what don't we know about our behavior or our skills that are impacting us negatively or perhaps aren't fulfilling our strengths in a way that really honors our natural talents? So a coach helps you navigate what I call the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's a really important, trusted, safe space to have that relationship with a coach. Mentors are extraordinary. They've been there and done that, and they can be a safe, confidential space to bounce off ideas. But I also want to talk about the idea of a sponsor. And I've had the benefit of incredible sponsors on my career journey. And you can't just raise your hand and say, hey, I'd like a sponsor. A sponsor comes to you because they recognize your great work, and they put their reputation on the line to help you advance, whether it is a promotion or a special project. But they're saying, Johnny, I think you are talented and hardworking. I've seen your work product, and I want to put you forward for that. So it takes a tremendous amount of responsibility to really endorse someone when you're putting your reputation on the line. And I want to say publicly on this wonderful show, we all have the opportunity to be mentors and sponsors, and I hope our listeners will consider that, because those can be really transformational relationships at any age. It's multi-generational.
Right. So true. I totally agree with that. How did the whole process for you as being an opera singer and then you transition to the corporate world and now obviously you're doing everything on your own from that perspective, how did it evolve into this heart-centered and passionately driven mission to help others in their work-life journey?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So let me just tell you the beginning story of how I became an opera singer, because it wasn't like I woke up as a child and said, I want to sing opera. I didn't even know what it was. You know, I mean, I was aware of it, and my family is very arts-minded, so we had always seen musicals and plays and orchestras and ballets, but I hadn't, as a teenager, yet seen my first opera live. I remember vividly what my first audience participation was as an opera singer. It was at the Metropolitan Opera, and we saw The Marriage of Figaro, and I just thought it was the most incredible, incredible thing. But I, as I mentioned in the beginning, I was in the church choir, and I actually talk about this in my TEDx talk. I was loud, and by that I mean I sang very loudly, and I had and still have a big voice. So here I am, you know, a preteen, probably 11 or 12, and the choir director very kindly approached my parents and said, she's a bit too loud for the children's choir. You know, I was kind of blowing the hair back of the kids. And she said, I don't want to squelch her enthusiasm. Would it be okay to put her in the adult choir? And my parents were lovely and said, sure. You know, so we talked about it, and there I was in the adult choir. But it just gave me a chance to sing naturally in a way that really honored adult voices. And just like anyone listening out there who finds their sport, whether they play volleyball or tennis or they're a runner or a swimmer, you know what your body does really well and how that fits. You know, maybe you're a marathoner or maybe you're a sprinter, two very different athletic endeavors. My voice is very naturally suited to the operatic classical repertoire. So that was really a gift to learn how to use my voice in a way that honored the sound and the tone and the size. And I explored a brand new genre, learned a lot about culture, learned a lot about repertoire, and learned three foreign languages. And I'll tell you, those experiences really empowered me in my non-musical career, thinking about what's next. But to answer your question about transition, I mentioned earlier that the reason that I stopped singing full-time, and I still sing, but it's not how I earn my living as such, the reason was that it was very difficult to maintain financially. It's certainly hard. That was not a problem. I value hard work. But I'll give you the ratio. Typically, they say you do 13 auditions and then you land one role. And that role might last for 6 weeks. So think about that like a job interview. Yeah. Every six weeks, you're interviewing for a new job. And in the musical world, we call it an audition. So that process was exhausting, and I was well aware of how difficult that was. But at a certain point, I wasn't yielding enough work to really maintain it. And that was hard. You know, that was an opportunity to admit, okay, this isn't working as I want it to, so what's next? And as I mentioned, that opportunity to learn by doing in the corporate world was extraordinary. I often say that I earned my MBA on the streets by learning the world of business by being in it and observing and asking questions and rolling up my sleeves. So it was a wonderful opportunity to do some additional training, some certifications as a coach, you mentioned in my bio, and to constantly learn. I'm a lifelong learner, and that was a great opportunity for me to add to my skills.
Fantastic. That sounds really wonderful. One of the things that is fascinating to me is the term that you use. What is failing forward?
Yeah, I love that. So the term started in the tech industry, specifically in Silicon Valley. And think about it. Silicon Valley is full of startups, many of which have become these extraordinary companies like LinkedIn and Google and Facebook. But they started as small companies in Silicon Valley before they became these mega global companies. And the term fail forward means, how are you going to try things and fail and be resilient, recover, prove to prospective funders, prove to a board of directors that you've tried a bunch of different things and you can handle the difficulties? And I firmly believe we need to destigmatize failing. Failing is brilliant because we learn from every failure. And I celebrate failing, quite honestly. That's where I learn some of my best opportunities and how I constantly improve things. It's a growth mindset. So I fully believe that we can fail forward, fast, and often.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. You hit it right on the nose as far as that goes. So how do you define a career?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because for me, a career is something that honors your skills, your passions, your values, and your personality. And for me, I take it a step further and think about what gives me meaning and purpose. So that's a very personal value that may be different for anyone listening. But I believe that a career is an opportunity to earn a livelihood that really honors those values, interests, personality, and strengths. And that shifts over time. You know, our values change.
Right.
My values when I was an opera singer were very different than what they are now. And that's okay. We grow and develop as we age. You know, people who have children, I know this is inspiring for the moms out there, whether you have children or you're thinking about having children, whenever you bring other humans into the family fold, the dynamic changes. So our values change. And it's important for our listeners to know that change is to be celebrated.
Right, right. So true. And career, too, if you look at it in hindsight, it's a hobby that you do and you get paid for it and hopefully get paid very well.
Well, I love how you mentioned that, right? Because we talk about vocation and avocation.
Yes.
And singing, for example, now is my avocation. I still earn money, but it's not as if it is my full-time career. So it is more of a hobby, but it's something that I do at a very professional level. And yes, I think taking things to the next level where you do what you're really interested in and turn it into a career, that can be incredibly validating. It's gratifying. But I want to say one thing because so many people working with a career coach get the question, what are you passionate about? And Johnny, I'll tell you, that shuts so many people down because they don't give themselves space to really think what they're passionate about. Passion is a big word. And I would encourage everybody, give yourself a break and start with, what do I like? You know, passion is a very deep, intense word that has some weight to it. If you're fortunate enough to know what you're passionate about, great. But don't torture yourself. Give yourself space to start with, what do I like? And go from there.
Right. So true. Well, like everything else, you need to have a little layup to goals that you're trying to accomplish.
Exactly.
And so forth.
Exactly. And you need to give yourself permission to change your mind. You know, I was such a linear focused person. I thought that I would retire as an opera singer. And that didn't happen. And that's okay. You know, many mm-hmm. different things happen on my life journey, which have made me who I am. And I'm confident that I will probably have more pivots before I'm done working.
Wonderful. What inspired you to write Your Career Advantage, Overcoming Challenges to Achieve a Rewarding Work Life?
Yeah, so this is my second book. It's my third if you think about the first book that had two different editions. So it was not my first book rodeo. But I'll give you some context, which will help our listeners. As I mentioned, here we are, March 20th, the four-year anniversary of when the world went into shelter in place for the pandemic. And during the pandemic, I was working virtually, like so many millions of people around the world were. I had a full-time job, and I'm also a very avid contributor to LinkedIn. And I was watching colleagues and friends and people, frankly, all over the world who were really having a tough time for obvious reasons. The pandemic was difficult for everybody, but the world of work changed dramatically, and everybody that could was forced to work at home. So I had always been a contributor to LinkedIn, but I started to really respond to what I was seeing and hearing out in the world and offer coaching advice and what I call pro tips, small actionable bits of insight that can help people immediately. And I began a LinkedIn newsletter. And Johnny, I'll tell you, it was so exciting. It started to explode. And today, less than 4 years later, I have almost 5,000 people who follow that newsletter, and it just started to increase incrementally because people were hungry for resources. And I knew that I could help, and I saw these common themes, these challenges, these problems, and I started to write to help solve those problems. And I realized these are very familiar to all of us, whether it is dealing with a difficult boss or wanting to advance but not knowing how, or how do I negotiate a salary, or how do I deal with a difficult colleague. So I decided that I wanted to create a book, a resource, that was like having me as your coach in the book. And Johnny, what I love about the book is you don't have to read it cover to cover. You can, but I'm hoping you can skim the table of contents and say, okay, this is what's happening to me today. Flip to chapter 3, that's going to help. And at the end of every chapter, I have a list of very succinct pro tips to help you. And it's not just overcoming challenges, that's part of it, but also how do we celebrate the wins, honor wellness, and have a rewarding work and life. So that was really the genesis of the book. And it's been such a lovely experience to be able to help people and provide them a resource. You know, my hope is it sits on your desk and you dog ear it and you highlight it and you refer back to it again and again.
It's a beautifully written book, as I mentioned, and is a definite page turner. I love the various pro tips at the end of a segment. And again, as you mentioned, it's just designed to walk you through, and definitely, as you mentioned, a wonderful playbook.
Good. Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I was working with my publisher, we really talked about what do we want to call it? And a workbook just seems heavy, right? It's work.
Right,
It's hard. So we called it a playbook because we wanted people to feel the levity of this is solution oriented. And when you're in a bind or you're having a tough day or you're dealing with something challenging, here's a resource that can help you no matter what.
Right.
And I also believe it's a primer to coaching. And it's not only about me as a coach. It's about everybody out there who can find help in a trusted coach or sponsor or mentor who can help them. And at the end of the day, the message is, you're not in this alone. We're all in it together, and it's okay to ask for help.
Right, so true. Speaking about sponsors, I know you mentioned a little bit about the role of a sponsor. How does someone advance their career with one?
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, just to recap, wouldn't it be nice if you could raise your hand and say, I'd like a sponsor, and sign up. But it doesn't work that way. A sponsor comes to you because they recognize your great work. So I would tell everybody first, be seen and heard. Be visible. And you really earn the right to a sponsor by doing great work. they put their professional reputation on the line to say, Johnny, I want to advance you and put your name in the hat in the ring for this promotion or this special project or something highly visible. So again, their reputation is at stake. So there is an accountability there to really do what you say you're going to do. But I would add, when you do great work and other people see it, the likelihood of a sponsor is very great. My message today is to everybody listening, think about how you can be a sponsor. Sometimes it's rather informal. You know, maybe some of the moms that are listening today also have responsibilities in their child's school. And maybe there's an opportunity to tap the shoulder of someone in your community who you think would be great on a committee or on the school board or serving in some capacity, to use that as an example. You could be a sponsor by saying, I believe you would do a great job in this role. Let's talk about it, right? So it's that classic tap on the shoulder to bring someone into an opportunity that's new.
Mm-hmm. So true. I look at sponsors based on what you've mentioned, and this is my own personal experience when I was in the C-suites and so forth, is to really make people understand that when you take your job, and this is where we're talking about coming to full circle, a career is a hobby that you do and you get paid for it, versus a job is something that you do to pay bills. And in this, with due respect to everyone, we're just having a kitchen table conversation here. But as I mentioned to people, when you take ownership of your position, like you're the owner in that moment in time, you send out a different type of energy. And sponsors are the ones that, this guy's got talent, and that's the difference. And I want to help him to grow. And I tell people this. I recruit blue chips, but a higher talent. Different.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. And I'll take it one step further, Johnny. I think what's so beautiful about that, you as a C-suite leader also attracted high potential talent and said, how can I help promote you? And I call that, let's throw the ladder down, right?
Right.
Let's throw it down to someone else who's climbing that proverbial ladder to say, I'm here to help. So not only am I going to throw the ladder in your direction, I'm going to put a hand out and help you get there. And that's a powerful thing. But I want to help our audience understand it's not just in the C-suite corporate world. It's everywhere.
Right.
It's in our community.
That's
it's
correct.
In our neighborhood. So I think it's really important to think about that.
So true. No doubt about it. One of the things that I like, and I'll let you take care of this, why do we need to interview our prospective boss?
So here's the deal. We spend a few hours at best in an interview. Think about it. There's a screening.
Yeah.
There's a second round interview. Sometimes your boss, your prospective boss, is in that interview. Sometimes they're not. So you're going in blind. So I firmly believe that it's incumbent upon everybody when they're considering a new role in their decision-making process to have conversation with your prospective boss. That can make or break your happiness at work. I'll tell you, as an executive coach, probably 80% of the clients that I work with are struggling with difficult relationships with a boss. It's very, very common. So it's incredibly important to know that the interview isn't enough time. And what I encourage is that you request 30 minutes. Everybody can afford 30 minutes. And you think about a one-on-one phone call, Zoom, or in person, if you have that luxury, to really get to know your boss and ask the tough questions. And I list those questions in the book because I feel so strongly about it. Tell me about your leadership style. Tell me about your expectations. How do you define success? Also, how do you like to communicate best? Because we can't mind read. We've got to be really clear and figure out, is that a good fit? And I'll tell you, it is a revolutionary experience when you really get to know your boss. It'll either tell you, yes, this is the right role, or maybe not. And that's an important consideration.
So true. People forget. How about this? In the end, we're having this conversation right here. We're in the people business. Commodity sells up to a certain point, but people buy from people.
Beautifully said. You're absolutely right. And I'll tell you, because it's relevant, I have done this three different times over a 15-year span. I've asked my prospective bosses for that 30-minute conversation. And I'll tell you, every single one said, wow, what a good idea. No one's ever done this before, but mm-hmm. they welcomed it. And I tell you, I asked the same series of questions that I put in the book, but relevant to Fail Forward, every single prospective boss at the time, I said, boss, do I have your permission to fail forward in this role? And they looked at me with quizzical eyes and said, yes, what a great question. Right. So we put out on the table that I'm going to try my best. Some things aren't going to work, but my goodness, I'm going to learn from those fail forwards. And I'll tell you, it really deepened our relationship. It built trust from the beginning. And mm-hmm. I strongly encourage everybody listening to do that, whether you're an entry level or you're a seasoned leader.
So true. I totally agree with that. You're listening to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. I'm Johnny Tan, your host. Our podcasts are available at iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Blueberry Podcasting, TuneIn Radio, Mixcloud, Podchaser, Listen Notes, and Hubhopper. Here's a quick reminder to treat yourself to a heart-centered and passion-driven Inspiration for Better Living digital magazine at inspirationsforbetterliving.com. March theme is Celebrating Women Empowerment in honor of Women History Month. My guest for today is Caroline Dowd Higgins. Caroline is a career and executive coach, consultant, and speaker who's passionate about helping individuals and organizations navigate change and thrive. She's a certified leadership transpersonal executive coach, a Marshall Goldsmith stakeholder-centered executive coach, and a Gallup Strength coach. Caroline hosts the award-winning podcast Your Working Life and is known for her inspiring TEDx Women Talk on Reframing Failure. Caroline's latest book, Your Career Advantage, Overcoming Challenges to Achieve a Rewarding Work Life, is a treasure trove of insights and strategies. It delves into the secrets of a successful career and a fulfilling life and offers practical advice on navigating the challenges often accompanying professional growth. Whether you are a mid-career professional seeking to advance or a C-suite executive looking to maintain your success, Caroline's playbook is a valuable resource. It addresses the unique challenges and the unexpected blind spots that can arise on your career journey by offering innovative ideas, inspiration, and techniques proven to achieve maximum impact. In our kitchen table conversation this morning, Caroline and I are talking about her remarkable life's journey and her latest book, Your Career Advantage, Overcoming Challenges to Achieve a Rewarding Work Life. Caroline, how do leadership styles of a multiplier and a diminisher affects the workplace?
So, Johnny, I want to set that up because Liz mm-hmm. Wiseman wrote an incredible book called Multipliers and Diminishers. And mm-hmm. that is what I reference in this chapter in the book. But let me set up what the definition are. So a diminisher is a leader, typically, that needs to be the smartest person in the room. They, mm-hmm. they're kind of braggy. They tend to be narcissistic. They take over all the conversations. And they literally suck all the oxygen out of the room, proverbially, right? And they make other people feel less valuable, where the multipliers make others better by allowing space for others to be seen and heard. They're developing others. They're honoring others. These are those classic sponsors. And I'll tell you, the difference is really extraordinary. So I aspire to help people become multipliers so they can build and groom and develop future leaders, because the diminishers don't care about anyone but themselves. And I think that's really sad. And the truth is, not very productive in the workplace.
Totally agree. When I was running my organization, I have meetings and I let everybody know it's like we're meeting at the round table, like King Arthur's and the Knights at the round table. All my regional divisions and district managers, when we show up and then we'll put all our sword on the table. And then allowing someone to actually really say, Johnny, did you do that to kind of really get to me under my skin? And that gives me a chance to say, yes, I did. I'm glad you got it. Oh, I'm so sorry. That's not the intent. And to correct it. And I totally agree, because the multiplier is someone that looks for talents and help to enrich them, to nurture them, to even be better, because collectively, by the time when we leave that round table, we have a working agenda that everybody is in total support, and it's a we thing versus me or you kind of thing. And
yeah,
that is very empowering.
That.
Yes, very, very empowering, yeah. Because what you don't want to have is that you want to have somebody out there who is upset, who is teed off or something, and is actually the virus is within the organization, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know what I think is really interesting? A multiplier creates space. Mm-hmm. So other people can share their ideas.
That's
where
correct.
The diminisher, it's all about them, right? It's their own
right.
personal TED talk.
Yeah.
And frankly,
yeah.
you get tired of hearing the diminisher speak on and on nonstop. You know, mm-hmm. diversity of thought is really important, especially on a team. So a multiplier makes that space so other people feel safe to be seen and heard. So
yes.
I love Liz Wiseman's philosophy there. I wholeheartedly agree with it. And I'm really on a mission to help decrease the diminishers and increase the multipliers.
Right, right. Well, I mean, in a nutshell, like say, your leadership style, are you a taskmaster or are you an organizer? The idea is you lead people, you manage situation. People
yes.
want to be led, not managed.
Exactly, exactly. When you give them that autonomy and that space and also the accountability, right? So
mm-hmm.
if they're failing
oh,
forward,
sure.
they're learning from
yeah.
it, they take responsibility. Yeah,
right.
I agree.
Yeah. So we hear a lot about emotional intelligence. What is emotional intelligence and how does it affect someone's executive presence and awareness?
Yeah, let's set up why emotional intelligence is important. It's not
okay.
brand new, but I look at the
mm-hmm.
evolution of a leader. And decades ago, leadership was command and control. And that came
mm-hmm.
right from the military, which was
right.
essential. You know, on the battlefield, you need to listen to your commanding officer. It's literally a matter of life and death. But leadership has evolved, and emotional intelligence is an ability to manage both your emotions, but also, Johnny, understand the emotions of the people around you, whether they're your teammates, your colleagues, or your clients, or your customers. And there are five key elements to emotional intelligence that I'll share: self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. And it's really important that leaders and team members have this emotional intelligence. So we're communicating openly, candidly, in a safe space, but also, as I mentioned earlier with the multipliers, are we making room for others? And it's not the me, it is absolutely the we. And
mm-hmm.
those ideas of self-regulation and self-awareness are part of the new paradigm of a modern leader. And it's really lovely to see how this is being embraced in the world of work. And these are some things that I work on with clients who are really either honing their existing leadership skills or learning brand new skills.
Right, right. That's beautiful. That's really wonderful. Why is approaching conflicts with a coaching mindset critical?
Oh, gosh, I love this. And this is one of the reasons why I love being a coach. A coach leads with curiosity. So, for
mm-hmm.
example, tell me more about that. Or I wonder about that. I'm curious about that, Johnny. Tell me more. So those are some little prompts. And when you shut down communication and remove space for growth, it's debilitating. So a coaching mindset leaves open space for curiosity. And as I mentioned earlier, so much of the conflict in life and career, and I'm sure all of us can relate to this, even around our very own kitchen tables, were mind reading. Unsuccessfully, you know, I
mm-hmm.
think I know what my husband's thinking, but I really don't. So why not ask him and have an open conversation? Because my guess is rarely going to be accurate. So it's an opportunity for us with a coaching mindset to create a space that we call psychological safety. And this is a trending phrase right now, and it's so important because it creates a space where someone is not afraid to add their idea or their point of view, especially if it's different from the group or from the leader. So a safe space to know that you're not going to be shot down or retaliated against. And it's an opportunity for you to be authentic and bring mm-hmm. different eyes to the table and ears. So a coaching mindset is very open.
Wonderful. I totally agree with that. Did that years ago, and this is something that people don't realize, because if you know that person, right, in the first place, we're working colleagues here or part of the team. So it's natural sometimes in the course of trying to do things right, someone may not do the right thing, or at least in your mind that is. And it's an opportunity for you to get educated. Like you say, let curiosity lead the way. And so listening someone into existence because you want to learn. Listen to learn rather than listen in anticipation to reply, in a nutshell.
Beautiful, beautiful. I love that. Yes. And I will add to that, I've also used the phrase listen to listen and not mm-hmm. to respond. But I love listen to learn because you're giving that space.
Right.
And I will also say, too, you know, the idea of a coaching mindset is a growth mindset. What can I learn, mm-hmm. as you just said, as opposed to a fixed mindset that says, we're done, I've got it all, we're good to go. Very rarely are we completely done. You know, there's always an opportunity to tweak and adjust.
Right. So true. What is the difference between a high achiever and a workaholic?
Oh, Johnny, this is why I wrote the book. Just to give everyone a little backstory, the role that I left before I became a full-time entrepreneur was extraordinary. It was a vice president role. I absolutely loved it. I was good at it. I can say that with humble confidence. But I became addicted to work. I was working 90 hours a week, which was unsustainable. And remember, part of this is the post-pandemic journey. So much mm-hmm. of that, I was working around the clock at home. And I realized I was missing my life, but I was also becoming debilitated health-wise. So I decided right then and there, I could still be a high achiever without being a workaholic. So let me define the two. A high achiever is very different than a workaholic in that they are results-driven and they focus on the end goal. So, for example, they use downtime to look ahead and prepare, or rest. And, Johnny, rest is so important. So is rejuvenation. We charge our cell phones every night, but we don't always recharge our bodies. So high achievers know when to turn up the intensity in their work, and they also understand how to say, I'm done. I'm done for the day. I need to rest and recharge. Where a workaholic, and I know because I used to be one, rarely puts down their work. And when they do, they feel guilty and anxious, thinking, but there's more to do. I've got to do more. And the reality is that there are many work environments that celebrate workaholism. They burn the candle at both ends. Mm-hmm. They say, I wrote this in the book, I'll sleep when I'm dead, or work is so crazy right now. You know, I'll take another coffee to keep myself up. And they celebrate that. And that's not a badge of honor. That's a badge of silly. So I really firmly believe that we can be high achievers and productive, but also work a reasonable amount of time. Because the truth is, when we're working those long hours, we're not as effective because our brains aren't clear and we're not as impactful. So I think there's an absolute opportunity to be a high achiever without overworking and being a workaholic.
Right. I totally agree with that. How is burnout a workplace issue and not a self-care issue?
Yeah. So burnout is defined by the World Health Organization, the WHO, as a workplace issue. Now, so many people think, oh my gosh, I'm tired, or I want to get a massage, or I need something to think about how I can replenish myself physically, emotionally. That's true. And I celebrate that. Take that downtime. Do whatever you need to be healthy. However, most often it's because you're burned out at work. And burnout means that you don't have enough resources. So maybe there aren't enough people to do the work. Maybe you don't have the technical or the financial tools to do what you need to do. Often, companies that downsize don't replace the workforce that has been let go. So one person might be doing the job of three, for example. And I imagine there are a lot of heads shaking out there saying, oh, yeah, that happened in my organization. So this concept of burnout is absolutely related to work. And organizations are really exploiting workers by not filling vacancies or paying market value. And Paula Davis, who is the president of the Stress and Resilience Institute, wrote a great piece called "You Can't Yoga Your Way Out of Burnout." And I absolutely love that because she's absolutely right. Do the yoga, don't get me wrong. That's good for your mind, body, spirit. But that isn't going to change the zany work reality where perhaps you're understaffed or under-resourced. That needs to happen in the organization. And that's what the World Health Organization is saying. Leaders need to be accountable and really think about how they can create sustainable workplaces.
So true. And that leads to my next question here. Why is creating a work culture that honors well-being essential for organizations?
Because when people are happy and healthy, they stay in organizations longer. There is a revolving door of talent in so many organizations. I mean, we saw the headlines, years ago about Amazon overworking their people. Then they hired a bunch of people, and then they laid off a bunch of people. So with all due respect to Amazon, they've still got some work to do. But psychological safety is, as I mentioned earlier, that space where you can be authentic. And we spend a lot of time at work. Think about it. Often we spend more time at work with our colleagues than we do at home with our family members. So mental wellness is at an all-time low right now. And again, this is coming from the World Health Organization. People are hurting emotionally and physically. And when people are burned out, productivity declines. So having that safe space so you could raise your hand to say, I can't do more physically. I cannot do more. And that doesn't mean that you're not an extraordinary worker and that you don't bring value, but you have the psychological safety to raise that issue without retribution.
Right. So true. Well, I call it as the corporate family genius zone. And that's where when you treat your corporate as family, it's through a different lens, basically. And people tend to forget that because sometimes when you use the term employee, then you kind of looking down in a way, like you're just one of the pieces in the puzzle that I'm moving around. Versus when you look at the corporate friendly perspective, then it changes the dynamics, so to speak. And that makes a big difference. And then, of course, at a later time, we can go into the P&L and look at cost rather than contributing to the bottom line.
and I'll say, Johnny, because I think that's a really good point. You know, so many companies push back and say, well, we've really got to watch our budget. We've got to watch our bottom line. But the truth is, if you're burning people out and there's a revolving door of talent, that is not a smart business move because it's expensive to hire, to retrain, to onboard. Right. It's much less expensive to retain your extraordinary employees and honor their health and well-being.
Plus, that's correct.
I mean, let's be frank. It's also the right thing to do, right?
Instead
of completely burning people out, be a good human and treat your human workforce well.
That's correct. That's what it's all about. What is the imposter syndrome and how can we overcome it?
Yeah, so imposter syndrome is really, it's become a household phrase. And it is that persistent inability to believe that your success is well deserved. And often people think, gosh, are they gonna believe what I have to say? They're going to think that I'm a fraud. And the irony, Johnny, is that high-achieving people are the ones who most frequently feel imposter syndrome. So it seems a bit of a paradox, but people that are doing extraordinary work. And it's men and women, and the data tells us that over 80% of people experience imposter syndrome. But I'm here to tell you that I think we're feeding this concept a little too much because I think people are automatically thinking self-doubt is imposter syndrome, and it's not. We all experience some self-doubt. But it's important for us to dig into those earlier messages that we may have received as a child. You know, my parents are extraordinary individuals. I love them dearly, but they brought baggage from their parents, right? That's just how families work. And I was taught, be humble, don't speak up, don't talk about money. So early in my career, it was very difficult for me to negotiate for a higher salary because I always had these messages, don't talk about money, that's inappropriate. So I had to really work through those things and get over it so I could confidently ask for more money in a negotiation, for example. So the truth is, imposter syndrome is something to be aware of, but it's really important to trust the people that say to you, Johnny, you do great work. If you can believe that they are giving you sincere and authentic kudos and recognition, that will help chip away at your imposter syndrome.
That's wonderful, really wonderful. Can you give us some strategies for advancing one's career?
Oh my gosh, this was one of my favorite chapters in the book because it's not only about dealing with challenges, but maybe you're just motivated and you're ready for something new. So number one, understand the value that you bring to your organization. Or if you're thinking of a different organization, and cheers to you, you know, you may be looking for a different opportunity. What's the value and the expertise that you bring? And don't be shy about sharing with your organization. Let's say you want to advance in the company that you're in right now. Tell your manager, tell your boss, and be really clear to say, I aspire to be the vice president or whomever in the organization. Don't be a well-kept secret. Also, we talked earlier about attracting a sponsor, someone whose clout and professional reputation can help you. And then the last thing that I'll say, Johnny, it's not only important to know the value and the expertise you bring, but think about your organization. What are their pain points? What are their challenges? And if your expertise can help solve a problem, that's where you become indispensable. And that's a great opportunity to showcase why you are worthy of being advanced.
Definitely. No doubt about that. What is the most important takeaway you would like the readers to gain from reading your empowering and playful book?
So I mentioned earlier my tagline, enjoy your career, love your life. And as a recovering workaholic, I want everybody to understand workaholism, if not sustainable, it will debilitate you mentally and physically. So the takeaway is find something that you love to do, but diversify and also enjoy your life. Add play into your life. And it's not just about going on a vacation or taking days off. It's about thinking how you can infuse play and other things in your life besides your career. If your career is the only thing you're focused on, chances are you're going to burn out.
That's true. Very, very true. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about your services, listen to your award-winning podcast, your working life, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Johnny, thank you so much. That's very kind of you to ask. I would say that my website is what I call the mothership. It's got my link to my book, which can be purchased on Amazon. It's got my podcast, my blogs, my videos, and all the information about the work that I do. And that is CarolineDowdHiggins.com. So my full name, CarolineDowdHiggins.com.
Fantastic. Wonderful. What is next for you?
Well, you know that I have given one TED Talk, and I'm very eager to do another one. So I am on the audition circuit for TED Talks, and I am eager and hopeful that I will land one in 2024. So keep sending positive vibes my way, because that's next for me.
Wonderful. That's very exciting. As we're closing this hour, since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Yes, I'd love that. So let me also say, I'm a terrible cook, but I have a good recipe here. So very simple. So four ingredients. One, enjoy your career, love your life. Number two, play every day. And that may be little, that may be large, but think about how you can infuse play into your life every day. Number three, rest. And that includes sleep and honoring your body. We recharge our cell phones every day. We need to get in the habit of recharging our bodies. And then lastly, every couple of months, get quiet with yourself. Have some self-reflection time. Maybe pull out a journal and consider what you really want and need in your life and career. because life gets so busy, often we really don't give ourselves that quiet time to consider what we need.
Fantastic. That's really wonderful. Caroline, thank you for the wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, please join me in 2 weeks, Wednesday morning, April 3rd at 10 a.m. Central Time, U.S. My guest will be Robbie Kelman Baxter. Robbie helps companies leverage subscription pricing, digital communities, and freemium models to build deeper relationships with customers. Over the past 21 years, she has worked with over 100 organizations in over 20 industries, including the National Basketball Association, Hagerty, the Wall Street Journal, Microsoft, and Ingram Micro. Robbie and I will be having a conversation about her remarkable life's journey and today's world of membership and subscription economy. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchenTalkRadio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Caroline, it has been a true pleasure. Thank you again and have a very blessed day.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.